Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for Group, and today we will be focusing in on leaving the wild west of esports behind and looking towards the future at how the industry can improve at a macro level and mining down into the experiences of a certain someone who has transitioned from pro play into pretty much all areas of esports business over the last few years. To help us explore how the industry has professionalized in the past and what we need to focus on in the future, I'm joined by Mr. Stan Press, the former Battlefield pro, Astro Gaming alumni and former advisor to Cloud9, who recently exited Frank N. Maggid Associates as the MD of Gaming and Digital Strategy. Stan, was that everything that you've been up to, or have I missed a few things off there?
I mean, you can never really cover everything you do in esports in a couple roles. I mean, it's what I love about this space is that you really get to be involved in every single level. So, thank you for having me on board. I really appreciate this. And to give you more of an example of my experience here, I've been involved in esports for about 12 years. I used to compete back in Battlefield 2, 2142, and Quake Wars from 05 to 08. That was a fascinating time, really, because that's when we would actually have to fly to events. Well, that's when we would actually pay for our own travel. Sure. And hotel and flights, and we'd be lucky enough to really win just a graphics card, a piece of RAM, just to sell to cover the cost for travel. Okay. But back then, that was still very much an industry based on passion. So once I actually graduated school, because that's when I was actually studying marketing at RIT at the time, that's when I realized, okay, so esports is probably not going to be able to get me a job. 2008, that was probably not going to happen. No, especially on the competition side, just weren't enough full-time opportunities there, and playing definitely was just not something I could continue. But even then, because just to actually graduate college, I had to actually figure out, do I want to stay competing? Do I want to try to go into more management and team management activities? Well, it was a tough decision, but at that point, I had to go back into team management and actually graduate college. Okay. Now from there, thankfully, because I was able to network for the last 3 years, or those 3 years in esports, I was able to get a lot of great friendships and connections out of that. It was actually a funny story when, at least I always thought it was funny, it's actually not that funny, but simply when about 6 months before graduation, I was telling people how frustrating it was to write a resume for the first time seriously. And immediately all my friends and vendors and connections and everyone immediately stepped up and said, hey, let me help. Happy to take a look, happy to pass it around. And that's when I inadvertently realized what networking was.
It's kind of like, but you stumble into it, actually realizing how much value there is just from sharing some time with people and actually just hearing their story and then working out some of the intangibles, right? It's the most under-preached aspect of business that I've really come across, I think.
No, for me, it was always just learning why they do what they do, how do they get into it. Sure. I was a student at the time. It was the right question to ask, but also I was fascinated. Whatever happened, thankfully, to just a lot of really friendly, awesome people, that kickstarted a career in gaming and marketing. Right in the middle of finals, that's when I was actually interviewing with a company called Xfire. Okay. So me dressed up in a shirt and tie because I was going from presentation to presentation to a final. In between those, I would actually jump into interviews with these guys. And from all the way in Rochester, New York to San Francisco, or more specifically Menlo Park, well, these guys like me, I like them. I went out and interviewed there, accepted the position, and in 3 weeks, managed to sell my place, quit my job, pack up everything, and move.
Okay. One of the things I really wanted to kind of tap into with you was to kind of understand the skills and the kind of intangibles that you picked up from being a former pro and how that kind of carried you over into the business world. It seems like when I was speaking to a lot of former pros that were involved in the passion days, like that kind of tenacity and raw energy for competitive play was really something that actually transferred from putting all of the hours in game and then actually aggressively going after opportunities themselves. So it sounded like in your early days you were kind of balancing multiple hats at once with your finals, but also with the other stuff that you were doing too. So it's just quite interesting to see how far the space has come in that regard.
And it was always fascinating because early esports really needed a lot of help, really needed a lot of just hard work because no one else has done it before.
Yep.
It really is, or at least used to be, a space out of passion. Not much more different than a little league, or any other category, or just event or industry or whatever, that simply just was built on people saying, hey, we need this, this is fun, let's do this. And for me, that just helped me understand how much passion is required. Because how much do you actually have to care about something to get involved, to deliver so much blood, sweat, and tears into it?
Sure. Yeah, it's one of the things that I've actually started doing recently. I've just signed up to get involved with the digital schoolhouse program with UKEY, which is partnering with 20 schools across the UK to kind of put together like a primary school esports league so that these kids can kind of learn about their potential careers and that sort of thing in a fun and engaging way that isn't just kind of meaninglessly lecturing them from their school hall. So it's, I would have never got involved in that in the past, but the opportunity has as if you just sprung up. I'm like, yes, this is a way to actually help these kids actually get engaged and also help the overall UK scene actually take a step up as well. So you, like, you kind of have to take those opportunities to make the most of it whenever they really come up.
Absolutely. Well, that's a lot of that in the space. I was given an opportunity because people were thoughtful and friendly to me and helpful. As such, I've always tried to give that back to people. And hopefully, I've helped a lot of friends get into the space, a lot of people that I realize have some good passion and energy, and just have the right desire to get into esports. Well, the challenge is that now the space is growing. It's no longer something that you can say, hey, I love esports, I want to get involved. This is now where you're going to need some level of expertise or business acumen to actually be good at it. Now, specifically, you guys see a lot of these great opportunities on teams and leagues, and some of the harder things are going to be defined are esports endemic leadership, esports endemic marketers, esports endemic social community. There's a lot of great people there already, but how many of them really have that agency-like experience? How many of them have that in-house experience already?
Yeah.
How many of them come out of either gaming or another area moving into esports with about 2 to 3 to 5 years of marketing or finance or management experience? Well, these are the things that we're going to have to start looking at stepping up. Now, am I saying anything wrong about the people in there currently? No, not at all. But this is now a space where they're getting multiple millions of dollars invested in. Now, some of these teams and leagues are potentially worth up to $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 million. And this is where I want to see the people who are internally already there getting paid what they're worth, as well as new people coming in, really having a high bar for the quality required to actually be a value to the team or league or any real partner in esports.
But that is 100% exactly what I've seen as well. Like, university across the market, it's been an absolute fever pitch, especially over the last year, for everyone to hoover up the kind of talent that have either been in the space for over 10 years or those that have either taken a break from esports, gone into the non-endemic areas and then stepped back in, or people that are just insanely passionate about games but haven't actually worked in esports before and have some really transferable skills. So it is, hopefully, with the kind of rise of university esports and esports fans actually being made more aware of how hungry all of these organizations are for the right people, that there will be more well-rounded people working in the space in the future. Like, I've been trying to help some of my friends that are all in mostly their mid-20s to get into esports at a certain level. And one of the things that they don't seem to really appreciate is that being a passionate gamer and just having the hard skill set isn't really enough. Like, you have to really shout and scream about why you deserve to be given a shot at this. So I've been working with one of my friends who's trying to go for a marketing position with one of the pro teams in Europe, and we've had to kind of completely strip back, you know, why is he going for this role, and actually like work out some ways to make him stand up above the rest. So building some unique case studies about a certain product, really showing that you already understand the narrative aims and commercial capacity of the organizations that you're actually just applying for. It's one of the things that I think the industry as a whole needs to get better at, and that is just, in quote marks, playing the game, be it pitching out to non-endemics, speaking to kind of larger brands, or actually working out how to sell yourself if you're trying to get into the space at any level, really.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of what comes down to is, what is your value? What can you do for a company? And what can you do for a company? Is this what the company needs?
Yeah.
If you can have a good definition of what that is and it matches to the company that you want to be a part of, then there should be a simple opportunity. But it's never that simple, is it?
No, it's all timing. Right.
The point is that you're going to have to be good at a lot of things And this company or team or org or tournament or publisher may need you to be really good at everything, depending on where you are in the world or where your skills lie. How do you make that match? So, I mean, that, literally, that's your job to help find someone to be a match, but also that's upon other people, the candidates themselves, well, to make themselves a candidate worthy of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's everything from having a good experience, being able to speak to your good experience, being able to leverage that experience specifically toward the needs of a new company, and having a CV or resume to prove it.
Yeah, it's the amount of messages that I get from people that are curious to get into the space just because it's the next big thing. I mean, it's good to see it, but at the same time, you know, how can I work, or how can you yourself actually find the right role if you're just going to say that you play, they used to play FIFA with your mates at uni. That's not really enough to be in esports or anything. Super interesting. And I think that because you've operated in multiple areas of the space, over the last 12 years, that you've got like a really good understanding and experience of kind of what tier one endemic orgs and agencies actually would look for in a ideal candidate. Let's kind of take a step back and look at the future of the industry as a whole. I know that on the events circuit in North America, you get pipped for quite a few speaking engagements now. I assume that a lot of the questions that you are asked at these events are still relatively broad, unless they're specifically, you know, focusing in on esports. So what is your experience of that being first before I ask you what your main unique spicy takeaway is to kind of make it still interesting for you, I guess?
We're talking about the conferences or the esports space in general?
Mostly the conferences, because I see that you have to do quite a few of those, and I've done a few myself, and sometimes the questions are so broad that you see the same people at the same conferences just kind of like regurgitating exactly the same very, very surface level insight, which doesn't really add much to the discussion long term. Just quite curious to see what your approach is.
No, I definitely agree that now that you've had a couple years of conferences specifically built around esports, is it time to start getting into the nitty gritty?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see more of that, yes. But also, I see that there are a lot of people at these conferences that are eager to learn, that want to understand the space, and that could be potential major value adds to the space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just how many times do I meet a legal counsel or marketing agency or brand reps or someone who works directly at a brand who's curious to understand the space? And for a lot of these people, a conference like this, they do this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great opportunity for them to learn something. And oftentimes, you only start at the 50,000-foot view. Now, if we could actually separate more classes that are more, not even classes, but panels or conferences that could be split between entry and master level.
Sure.
Not so much master level, but just really get into specific details of showcasing best ofs, worst ofs, and learnings. I would love to see more of that. But I also don't want to discount that for every time we've done one of these conferences, while there might be some negative sentiment on them, I've always enjoyed them. I've always had a good time. And
yeah,
I've always liked to see how much I managed to help somebody, even if it's just one person at a time.
Yeah, I mean, if you convince one person that esports is worth taking seriously and they happen to be in a position to bring a high potential player into the space, or, you know, can actually add value, then that's great. I guess if you kind of only dwell within the echo chamber of esports, it's quite easy to get frustrated with having the same conversations over and over again. But, you know, as I've said on pretty much every episode of the podcast, is that, you know, education is super important at the moment at almost all levels of the industry. So it does need to keep happening. It's interesting to see some new events starting to crop up with the SBJ's partnership with Laggard Dare for Esports Rising in Los Angeles. I really hope that London starts to get a stronger esports-specific B2B presence in the future, and hopefully a looking for group could actually be a part of that, of organizing those. But, you know, we...
That's more of a kind of like a hint, kind of like, hey, you know, it would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be good.
No, that's fine. It's like, well, the thing is that there... You look at it as, yes, there's a lot of these events popping up, and some of them are great, and some could be a little bit stronger. For me, that's a sign of a growing and necessary space when other groups are taking interest.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always going to be the right level of interest? Is it going to be the best possible activation? Maybe not. But for me, again, I see this as validation. I see this as an opportunity, and I see this as our space grows, more and more legitimacy will come back into it and out of it. And what I say is, what I mean by that is, the more events are coming around esports, and some of them you might think are, well, they're just trying to take advantage of esports. Have you seen any other industry ever before? Literally any industry, and you can see that there are people trying to take advantage of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not so, like esports is going to be this golden child that's going to be protected. You know, there's always going to, like, the forces of business will just find opportunities to make a profit. You know, that's just the global system in which we live in. There's nothing particularly negative or positive about that.
Exactly.
But there are better ways of actually going about that process to have a wider social or just a positive value in general. When you're at these events, what is the kind of main takeaway for the surface level, entry level piece of trying to piece together esports in a kind of neat little soundbite or way that's really going to resonate with a new crowd? What's the kind of key takeaway that you would make sure that those in attendance would take home with them?
Now, there's a lot of areas to cover. In particular, we love to make fun of the word authenticity because it's the most required word in esports, but also the most overused word in esports.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, because it's something difficult for traditional marketers to recognize is that, well, for them, a lot of times can do fairly focused and authentic marketing. But on how much of a precision level do they need to be? Because when it comes to esports, you absolutely do need that laser-focused authenticity.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just not even allowed through the front door. So one of the things that we always have to drive in is simply that esports is a place where the audiences are some of the most highly engaged experiences you'll ever find.
Mm-hmm.
But as such, if you're going to talk to them, you're going to have to speak to them on their level and their ground.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a generic messaging that's going to work from a detergent brand. It's not going to work on esports.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we've heard echoed in the community over the last 10 or 11 episodes, really, has been, we had a few people on discussing, you know, how can brands get into esports? And pretty much every single time we've spoken about new players coming in, it's always been authenticity, understanding the player base first and not trying to kind of go top down onto what your business aims are, but actually to go down to their level. So it seems like that's pretty common held understanding inside the space, especially among those that are in areas of significant responsibility. I'm just curious to see whether that's actually being heard, because it seems to be a consensus when you speak in the esports echo chamber. But we're starting to see some really interesting bits of content and commercial partnerships that are demonstrating that certain brands like Mercedes are getting it. I mean, their activation at ESL Hamburg and the amount of kind of memes that were being put around for the, you know, the best ever Mercedes E-Class, and all the fans picked it up, all the cast has picked it up. That's amazing. Like, embrace the power of the meme was one of the last points that James Dean from ESL UK was saying at the Future Games Summit a few weeks back. And I just hope that message actually gets through. But that's so anti-normal brand values, right? It's normally like super high production, but normally the most kind of pieced together meme is actually probably going to get the most traction with esports fans, just because it's exactly their language.
So it's also challenging to actually take memes into, well, guaranteeing a meme.
Yeah, sure, it's impossible.
You can't do that. No, there's a certain lightning has to strike twice effect here, and
exactly.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is that if you can leverage a sense of humor, because the audience responds to just honesty and humor.
Yeah.
A perfect example would be what we saw at the Gamescom PUBG tournament, where as much as production may have not been going the way the casters wanted, the casters actually added a lot of levity.
Sure.
A lot of humor. And even through their own frustrations, they just managed to persevere. And,
yeah.
And that's what I feel is a perfect example of how to say. Now, they have, in my opinion, saved that event. Through their humor, through their commentating, they managed to actually turn that around. And as much improvement as they could over the week, they did. And I'm really curious to see the improvements they're going to make from Gamescom to IM Oakland.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think
yeah.
There's going to be a drastic level improvement. But it was just, that's a perfect example of how honesty and brevity can really keep an audience engaged. Well, that's what you're going to need to do and learn how to do in esports. And as a traditional brand, I'd be very surprised if they have that kind of experience. So I wouldn't recommend they do that right away.
No,
and simply look at a lot of content and a lot of the marketing that they do and try to figure out how we can translate to what an audience does. Because you look at PUBG audiences, they're going to be different than CSGO, League, Dota, FGC, you name it.
Sure. Yeah, it's really interesting.
There might be some similarities, but you might find a couple things that are common amongst those. But in general, each audience is going to have its own language. And when brands get scared of this, we simply remind them that, well, doesn't baseball and basketball and hockey and football, don't all of them have their own languages?
Sure. Yeah.
And immediately they recognize that, but then again, the unfamiliarity sets in. And that's where the leagues, the teams, any agencies involved really have to do an incredible job of leveraging the voice and the communication required for whatever their opportunity is in esports and how a brand could translate that into that space. That's one of the hardest and challenging experiences that we're going to see more and more of.
Yeah, and that's why I think with all of the franchise disruption next year and all of these kind of new esports titles that are going to be coming out, if you look at Tobias Sherman's new development team that he's gone public with recently, it's going to be really, really interesting seeing how, one, the already dominant esports titles actually work with new brands to build up, but also the new esports titles that actually can kind of start strong by already having this understanding and actually bringing the community on first. I mean, that's obviously where it all starts. You have to have a great game that's really fun to play. It has to have longevity in the detail of the play. It has to be observable and it has to be fun to watch. You know, so with those four basic tenets on the lock and key, hopefully we're going to start to see some really interesting disruption as the new games come out next year, which is where, you know, we've started to see the high potential of a PUBG over this year. Not necessarily easy to observe, but really fun to watch, really fun to play, and with a stupidly high skill cap too. So super excited for that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, as long as there are more games coming in, that's what I think the space is going to keep on growing. There's really, in my opinion, very few limits here. Now, thankfully, I also have to remember that CSGO and some kind of experience has been around since 1999.
Yeah, exactly.
Dota has been around since early 2000s.
Yeah.
League of Legends has been around since 2009. We're seeing longevity here.
Yeah.
So at that point, people are asking, well, is it a fad? I have to ask. 20 years is not a fad.
That's 10, a very good
15
point,
years
actually.
Is not a fad.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I'm just really excited to see. I mean, we've kind of got bogged down slightly, and it's been one of... like, I know that you don't have a huge amount of time this morning, so I don't want to keep you here for too long, but it's just been one of the things that we've been discussing recently is with the brand piece around how can we get them in. The fact that the Counter-Strike, Dota and League have been around for so long but haven't been able to kind of get those casual audiences in because of either the game requires hundreds of hours to actually understand or is far too violent. You know, there is a massive opportunity for new titles to kind of learn those more subtle lessons whilst building a great game. So there's all the there's just a few kind of X factor boxes that you can tick to kind of make this title more commercially commercially viable and not just fun to play. So that's where I see the most amount of space for innovation. Obviously with great games as well, that's really important, but Counter-Strike will forever be limited as a kind of high street esport by the fact that it's terrorists versus the police with massive headshots and lots of blood and violence. You know, I think it might take a few years for that to relax, but in the meantime, as this kind of exponential growth in the industry is still absolutely soaring, it will be one of the limiting factors for Counter-Strike, and that's why these new titles excite me so much, not just as an actor in the space, but also as a player as well. You know, I'm still hooked on League after starting playing it 3 years ago. I mean, it's not like the longest League history, and I'm still absolutely terrible, and a lot of Dota fans probably have switched off the podcast, but, you know, I'm still completely bought in, but it's the narrative of I can always improve that I think is so basically addictive for players and fans of the esports production too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know that you're running out of time, so I just kind of want to ask you one more question before we let you go. There's a bunch of more stuff that I'd love to pick your brain on, but unfortunately our schedules are against us. The last question is our recurring segment, which for this week is going to be It's Always Sunny in Esports Elsevier, which is absolutely awful. My producer is shaking his head at me. He's like, what have you done? Basically, the question is...
Don't worry, I'm doing the same thing.
Everyone else is like, oh, God. Well, you know, if you want to help the podcast improve, please email us or tweet us some time-related titles.
Please, they really need the
this
help.
This is actually awful. But my question for you is if you could have any role in esports, past, present, fantasy or future, in any title or any level, what would it be and why?
That's a good question. But I also like giving boring answers for boring questions. No, just kidding. I like to give boring answers for good questions. Because if anything, the spiciness that I like to provide in my answers are generally around how other people react to things,
sure,
not to how I feel about things, because I always try to be more of the calming force in the space.
Yeah.
All that being said, I would love one day just to start my own team from scratch, just to prove that I can do that myself. Well, there's just so much that goes into building a roster, and I can't imagine the stress that talent managers have to have these days and team owners carry to this day. I'd be curious to see what the space would be like in a few years and come in with that foundation already laid out and try to build something brand new from the ground up.
I think that would be so
exciting. Would it be possible?
Yeah.
Would it be difficult? Possible. I don't know. Difficult, absolutely. But these are things that I actually think are interesting to see what the esports space is going to look like in a few years and to build something new there. If the opportunity presents itself, maybe. If not, otherwise, I'm just really grateful to be doing what I'm doing right now and helping the space grow as it always does.
Sure. And I think if I was ever asked that question by someone, I think that answer would be one of my top three. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that it would go as well as the team that you might set up, but I would still absolutely love to do that. One of my favorite things that I did as an early gamer was to kind of build clans in really obscure games, kind of build the community, put like all structures together for all of the trainings and all that sort of thing. It's by no means the same as a tier one esports team, but that's one thing that I'd be super passionate to do.
No, it's just because how I got my start in the industry was playing on a team and getting involved in team management.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be one of my first experiences that I'm always going to look back to with the most fondness.
Yeah.
No, it makes sense. But thankfully, the rest of the space is growing and, you know, it's not going to get boring. Let me put it that way.
No, there's plenty of stuff to do. There's plenty of new products, new startups, new titles. This is a whole bunch of new that can come in at pretty much any level of the space. There's a massive land grab going on across all areas, and I think that's going to continue for the next few years as well. So there's by no means just because you've been in the space for 10, 12 years, does that mean that you're going to run out of something super interesting and exciting to do. Stan, I'm going to let you go and get on with the rest of your day. Really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us. Where can the audience reach you if they want to keep track of what you're up to or if they want to get in touch?
Simply LinkedIn. Just look up Stan Press, and you're probably going to be the only Stan Press up there.
Okay.
And on Twitter or Instagram at ONNIGHTSTAN. Once again, ONNIGHTSTAN. That is One Night Stan in cool leadspeak format. If anyone played CSGO back in the early days, would actually recognize and appreciate that. Unlike a lot of new people who simply read it as ON3 Night Stan and give me a giant headache.
Awesome, Stan. Likewise, guys, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so on Facebook and Twitter at LFG Esports HR. We're going to be getting our social media actually started in the next few months, so stay tuned for that. And as always, any and all feedback, ratings, and reviews on iTunes or through Spotify and Stitcher. Those just help the podcast grow and for more people to hear my lovely buttery tones. So yeah, Stan, once again, thanks for coming back on, and everyone else, we will see you in the next one next week.